Broadcasting from the Washington, D.C. studios of the National Right to Life Committee, this is Pro-Life Perspective, America's pro-life voice. And now, here's National Right to Life President and Pro-Life Perspective host, Carol Tobias.
One of the hallmarks of the so-called Right to Die movement is the eagerness to extend the so-called benefit of hastened death to wider and wider populations of vulnerable people. The standard tactic of pro-death advocates is to start with a small population of suffering patients. For example, in the Netherlands, the first euthanasia cases in the early 1970s involved terminally ill patients in intractable pain. Now euthanasia has been expanded to include non-voluntary euthanasia and euthanasia for psychological and social reasons. The experience in the U.S. is similar. While proponents of direct killing have met with little success, advocates of indirect euthanasia have been more successful. Today in the United States, vulnerable patients can be denied food, fluid, and life-saving medical treatment without their knowledge or consent, or even against their will. An article in the Western Journal of Medicine by the late bioethicist Ronald Cranford shows the latest targets of pro-euthanasia forces. We saw the progression of this thought by Cranford and other bioethicists in the case of Robert Wendlin. Wendlin was severely injured in a 1993 car accident and awakened from a coma, but was left with significant brain injuries. He was not in a persistent vegetative state, but his wife declared that Robert would not wish to live in that diminished capacity. Robert's mom and sister contested Wendlin, who had taken her case to court. In the end, Wendlin died before the California Supreme Court issued its final ruling. It was a narrowly defined case, but a victory nonetheless for anti-euthanasia forces. In a 2001 ruling, the court held that a conservator, in this case Wendlin's wife, must show clear and convincing evidence, either that the conservatee wished to refuse life-sustaining treatment, or that to withhold such treatment would have been in his best interests. Because there was no such evidence in Mr. Wendlin's case, the court ruled that the life-sustaining food and water could not be denied. Documents filed with the court showed Wendlin had been improving. He had acquired abilities to operate a motorized wheelchair, move in a manual wheelchair, indicate yes or no on a communication board, paint, and play wheelchair bowling. He was clearly not unconscious, but he remained unable to make his own medical treatment decisions and required tube feeding and hydration. But Cranford, who testified in many food and fluid withdrawal cases, dismissed the unmistakable evidence of Wendlin's improvement. Author Wesley Smith notes, "According to Cranford, these and other of Wendlin's activities mean little. He also opined in his testimony that Wendlin's therapists, who believe he has slowly improved, should be disregarded by the trial judge because they are only seeing what they want to see." The larger context of this and other similar cases is the attempted coinage of assorted lethal categories for cognitively injured patients, which would justify their deaths. In other words, since persistent vegetative state diagnoses are notoriously hard to make, and in any event, since there are thousands of vulnerable patients who are brain injured but not in a persistent vegetative state, if the objective is to legitimize their deaths by starvation and dehydration, new labels must be created to justify a painful, ugly death. Which brings us to Cranford's article in the Western Journal of Medicine, which we'll examine tomorrow. By way of preview, there's this highly pertinent statement referring to the term minimally conscious state, or MCS. Just as the first quarter century of the Right to Die movement may be exemplified by the medical, legal, and ethical assessments of brain death and the vegetative state, so the first quarter century of the new millennium may be the era of patients who are substantially neurologically impaired, but conscious to a variable degree. Perhaps MCS will capture the essence of this next wave. Join me tomorrow as we take a closer look at this new wave.
You've been listening to Pro-Life Perspective from National Right to Life, the nation's largest grassroots pro-life organization. For more information on today's episode and to get involved, visit our website at www.nrlc.org.